Welcome back, folks. It's good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're about to have a conversation with a man I've been looking forward to talking to for a while. Dr. Jonathan Farley is a brilliant mathematician who's called one of the world's most impressive young mathematicians. He teaches at Morgan State University. He's been doing incredible work around lattice theory, which we'll be talking about, but applies lots of social issues to terrorism. He's written a lot about the Black Panthers and much more. And so, Dr. Jonathan Farley, welcome. Good to have you with us in the studio.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So, I guess it feels like math is in the air. First, let me just say, I love math. I'm not the greatest mathematician. I fathered a brilliant young woman who's a mathematician.
Oh, really?
And my best friend was a mathematician and a revolutionary and a deep mathematical thinker and a professor. So math has been swirled around me, but it's not, you know. So I've always been intrigued. Let me just take a couple steps backwards. So talk about your sojourn into math. I mean, how did you end up as a PhD in mathematics? Where did that begin for you?
It probably began with my father when I was maybe 7 years old. I remember, in fact, I can see the book that my father used to teach me from right now in my mind's eye. It was a green book where we could do problems like converting from Roman numerals to Arabic numerals and counting, you know, determining how much change you have, that show pictures of coins and you're supposed to count it up. But I decided to become a math professor in high school English class, actually.
In English class?
I actually liked English, but that wasn't the reason. The reason was that in 10th grade, we were given this questionnaire to fill out. And the questionnaire was supposed to give us our ideal vocation. So I answered the questions dutifully, and the answer that popped out for me was mathematician/statistician. So that was the first time that I thought of becoming a math professor, and so that's what I did.
Huh. So what did your dad do?
My father was an economist, and my mother's an historian.
Okay. So where'd you grow up?
In upstate New York. So there's a suburb of Rochester called Brockport.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So the work you've been doing, the first thing that came to my attention was the stuff you wrote about the Black Panthers.
Yes.
So, and I told you about my friend Michael Brand, who passed away, but was a brilliant mathematician, but had been a revolutionary most of his life. It seems you followed a similar path in some ways. I mean, politically, you have this very deep views about where we are, why we are, about race and politics, your views of the Panthers in that period and where we are now. Is that fair to say?
Well, now I'm very jaded. But I'll point out that
We all get jaded after a while, right?
But I think my brother told me that Marx wrote a calculus book or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, right.
But for my part, I view them as separate. I love math, and I'm not the greatest mathematician, so we're alike in that sense. I love math, but I found politics or political concerns were essential. So I would have preferred to just be able to focus on my math, but I knew that there are all these problems out there that needed addressing. So that's why I was involved in politics. Although these days, I'm not.
Not so much?
Not so much, no.
So, but there's a, from my friends who are political theorists and economists, there's a lot of math involved in that. Right?
There is actually. So in my father's work, not so much math. He was actually a development economist. So he worked for the United Nations. In fact, the day my parents got married, they flew off to Tanganyika.
Now Tanzania.
Yeah, now Tanzania for my father's UN job. But from what I see, yes, there's a lot of math in economics. And even my particular subfield of math, lattice theory, is involved in economics. So there's a 2012 Nobel laureate, L. Roth, who got the Nobel Prize for some of his work which relates to lattice theory. In fact, his first published paper, as far as I could tell, was a paper in lattice theory, even though he's an economist.
So describe for our listeners what lattice theory is.
So lattice theory is best described in terms of pictures, so it's ideal for this medium. But it has to do with the abstract properties of ordered sets. So you might have a hierarchy of some kind. An organization chart would be a partially ordered set. And lattices are algebraic structures where if you have, say, two entities in this hierarchy, there's always going to be some third entity which is above those two, outranks them, but is somehow the smallest one that outranks both of them. So that's half of what makes something a lattice. So that's what a lattice is.
L-A-T-T-I-C-E.
L-A-T-T-I-C-E.
So you wrote a piece about how lattice theory and these theories you work on fit into anti-terrorism.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So describe that. I'd like to try to update that for a moment. Describe what that was. Fascinating article.
So the almost the first week that I was a visiting professor at MIT, I saw this flyer for a talk called Modeling the Al-Qaeda Threat. And it was a talk being given by someone named Gordon Wu, who worked for a company, Risk Management Solutions. And so I went to his talk, and he showed these pictures of terrorist cells, like the 9/11 terrorist cell. I used to say alleged, but now I just say 9/11 terrorist cell. But he showed this picture and said that one of the tasks of people in law enforcement might be to try to break up a cell, to disconnect it so that it falls apart into different pieces that are not themselves connected. So the picture shows these dots representing the individuals and then lines connecting individuals if they have some type of connection. And so I saw that that type of picture does not adequately tell you whether or not you've disrupted the cell, because it ignores the hierarchy, the hierarchical aspect of the cell. A lot of experts, or so-called experts in counterterrorism, will say that Al-Qaeda is not hierarchical. Their cells are not organized in that fashion. But if you have a cell operating like a military unit, somebody's going to be giving orders. Now, I'm not an expert in that domain. What I do is I come up with a model. The model is malleable enough that people who are experts can say, no, this isn't right, this is right. In fact, someone who's now a colonel in the Air Force told me that, okay, there are certain aspects of my model that aren't right. But he invited me to speak at a naval base to describe to his colleagues, some of whom did know lattice theory, what it was I was attempting to do. So I'm not saying my model is perfect and I understand how terrorist cells are organized, but I develop a general model that experts can look at. And one thing that I'm really pleased about, almost proud to say, is that the Ministry of National Security in Jamaica did use my model. So the head of their National Intelligence Bureau, Kevin Blake, who carries a gun and has a PhD, so he's an actual bona fide policeman.
I like the way you put that. Carries a gun and has a PhD.
Yeah. He actually used my models, according to the Jamaica Observer newspaper, and along with ideas of his own, and that contributed to the breaking up of not a terrorist cell, but some sort of criminal gang that was smuggling, guns and maybe ganja.
So, I mean, is it fair to kind of say, when people struggle with the importance of math, that in some ways math is kind of fundamental to understanding our existence? I mean, people make that argument, right?
Yeah. It's fundamental to understand to the universe.
Right.
So I like to tell my students that, God himself cannot change the value of pi. Right, 3.14159265358979. It goes on from there. Now, I say this when I'm indoors, so I can't get hit by lightning. But that's how fundamental math is. And physics, the speed of light might be different. We can imagine maybe there's some alternate universe where Spock has a beard and electrons have a different mass than they do in our universe. But you can't do that with math. It's a fundamental discipline. So that also is what excited me about mathematics, not just that it can be applied to physics or computer science, but that it was the most fundamental knowledge you could have. And that's also why philosophers liked it. I haven't read much Spinoza, but he loved geometry.
Right. And I love Spinoza. Yeah.
And a lot of philosophers liked to arrange their arguments in this kind of geometric form, this Euclidean type of format.
One of your colleagues at Morgan, who chairs the physics department, is a deep believer in alternative universe. We had that big battle with another astrophysicist on our show around that issue a little while back. Uh-huh. I ask that question because I think that people don't understand always the importance of mathematics in our life, right? And why, for many students, it's like this abstract thing that doesn't seem to fit into existence.
Yes.
And trying to change that way of thinking, understanding the power of math and what it really does.
Yeah, I mean, I try to tell the students that I teach, when I teach this course, Mathematics for Liberal Arts, how math might impact their actual lives. I ask them what their major is, and I try to figure out how math connects to it. It doesn't always, of course. Like, I had a student who wanted to be a football coach, and all I could do is tell him that there's a member of the Baltimore Ravens who's doing a PhD in math. But in general, like, if you take something like social work, a lot of students are majoring in social work at Morgan State University. And so if you're interested in foster care, I suggested to one student recently that she could perhaps try to find ways of profiling children and potential foster parents to see who might fit where together. And there's a branch of lattice theory, which is called formal concept analysis, which could perhaps help do something like that. Or I had a student in political science who emailed me just yesterday thanking me for telling him about Arrow's theorem. Arrow is a man who got a Nobel Prize in economics, but he proved a mathematical theorem about the impossibility of finding an ideal voting system. Math, that's maybe more abstract, but, you know, clearly.
So let's
voting.
Take that what you just said.
Yes.
So I have not read that. So people are always kind of battling politically over what a fair, democratic, and ideal voting system would be.
Yes.
So what does his work say? I mean, why does he say it's an impossibility? What's the fundamental part of the work?
So my recollection isn't perfect, but the theorem says, suppose you have a system which takes people's choices for candidates. Say you have at least three choices for a candidate, and everybody ranks them. And then you want to take all that information somehow and figure out what society's ranking of these three candidates would be. And when you do that, you want a reasonable way to go from the individual votes to the collective decision. For example, if everybody says candidate A is better than candidate B, and everybody agrees that candidate B is better than candidate C, then in the overall societal ranking, that should also be the case. And then there are a couple other reasonable axioms for voting, things that everybody would agree, yeah, if we have a voting a function, some way of taking people's individual preferences and turning it into society's preference, that's reasonable to have. And the conclusion, though, of Arrow's theorem is that with these reasonable conditions, the only perfect system is a dictatorship, where one person's rankings determine society's rankings. So it's a curious theorem. It's called Arrow's impossibility theorem. But it does show that then there isn't going to be a perfect voting system. And there have been books written by mathematicians on this topic. I haven't read them, but I own several. It's very interesting. But probably few mathematicians are actually involved in deciding whether we should have, this instant runoff voting or just the first past the post voting. Probably there are almost no mathematicians or people who really understand these theorems involved in making these decisions. But you can also game the system. So if you know that you can how the voting function works, this aggregation works, then you could try to come up with a result that you like. So on the website for 538.com, Nate Silver's website, they had a really neat article before the election about how you can gerrymander your way to victory. So it had a picture showing a 5x5 grid with 9 blue squares and 16 red squares, but arranged in a particular way. And it said, can you arrange for there to be 5 square blocks, which represent voting districts, so that even though the blues are in the minority, there are only 9 blue squares and 16 red squares, you can arrange it so that in a majority of the districts, the blues have a majority, so that they would completely control whatever the legislative body is. And there is a way of doing that. And then the question is, that should scream out at people, well, we can do that in our country as well. So people should be aware of that and beware that.
Sounds like the Republicans have figured that out.
They probably have, yes. Yeah. Typically, I find that Democrats get outclassed in every direction. Like, they compromise constantly and then expect the other side to compromise. And then they act surprised when the other side is in control. They don't compromise.
Well, this has been a joy, and I hope you will come back and join us again. Dr. Jonathan Farley, who's an associate professor of mathematics at Morgan State University, and our interesting mind, an interesting thinker, joining us in the studio. We're going to look forward to this. And Jonathan, hey, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we have to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, it's a very special segment from the Steiner Show archives. A conversation I did about 20 years ago with legendary singer and actress Eartha Kitt. Before we get to that and get to our break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From limiting overtesting to protecting public school funding, you can learn more about the issues facing Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org.